My guest, Dr. Peter Nathaniels, is the director of the Laboratory for Pregnancy and Newborn Research at Cornell University. He's researching how a pregnant woman's diet, stress level, and hormonal changes affect her developing baby's long-term health and well-being. Dr. Nathaniels is the author of the new book, The Prenatal Prescription. He claims that fetal programming is at least as important as genetics in determining long-term health. I asked him to explain the concept of fetal programming.
The fetal programming states that suboptimal conditions in the womb before birth can alter the trajectory, the way the fetus develops, in a fashion that it will affect lifetime health, that issues in the womb will change the function of our liver, our pancreas, our hearts in a way that will be persistent throughout life. And the studies are just overwhelming to support this. Now, babies in the womb have some very clever tricks up their sleeve. If you are short of oxygen as a baby in the womb, you protect your brain. You send most of your blood to your brain. The baby does that. But obviously, it's got to take the blood away from somewhere else. So it cuts down the blood supply to its liver, its gut, and its muscles. It stops moving, but it protects its brain. Now, in the short term, that's enormously clever. But in the long term, it means that you grow a small liver. And indeed, if you look at a growth-retarded baby, an obstetrician tells that a baby is growth-retarded not by the fact that it's 5 pounds. If your genes want you to be 5 pounds, that's fine. The growth-retarded baby is the baby that's 5 pounds whose genes wanted it to be 10 pounds. And you can indicate that baby by measuring the head circumference and measuring the waist circumference. And if that ratio is high, if the head-to-waist ratio is high, that is proof positive that you protected your brain at the expense of your tummy and the organs in your tummy. Now, the smaller your waist girth at birth, the higher the blood cholesterol at the age of 50. So we are not just what our genes make us. We are programmed, in some measure at least, by the conditions we experience prenatally.
Now, mothers through history have always felt that they were eating for two and that they've had to be careful about what they eat. They're very conscious that it's going to affect the development of their fetus. What's new about fetal programming compared to just this general idea that the things you do are going to affect your baby?
Well, I think the real issue is that they're going to affect your baby for a lifetime. And, you know, that, I think, is an enormous quantum leap in emphasis. And I do believe this is a new paradigm in understanding what is important. We can change the health of society much more quickly by more careful attention to pregnancy than we can ever change it by changing the gene pool. This is such an amazing period of our biological lives. The baby, you will never be cleverer biologically than you were as a fetus. You live in one world according to one set of rules while preparing for another world where you'll have to live by another set of rules. It is a synthesis of how the genes work. It's a synthesis of how the environment affects those genes. To me, it is the single most important story in human health.
Could you give us an example of a disease that you think can be traced to fetal development and a disease that could perhaps be prevented in fetal development?
Well, type 2 diabetes and obesity, we have an explosion of type 2 diabetes and obesity now. It's very clear that although everybody's looking for the gene for obesity, the gene for type 2 diabetes, it's very clear from the animal studies that undernourished fetuses are born with pancreases that do not function as well. And then if they live a life of fast food, as too many of us do, that pancreas is going to be much more prone to give up, and that individual is going to be much more prone to type 2 diabetes. In the developed world, it is the poor who are generally fat. In the developing world, it is the rich who are fat. And in my book, I explain how biologists now understand that, because the underprivileged the underprivileged baby in the womb, again, as I mentioned earlier, has some clever tricks up its sleeve. It prepares for an underprivileged environment outside. If you're a lion cub on the Serengeti plain in your mother's womb and you're short of food in the uterus, that's a pretty darn good indication that there's not much food outside. There's famine outside. Your mother's not making enough kills. So you develop already in the womb what's called a thrifty metabolism. You learn how to grab on to every calorie you can so that when you come out, you're going to survive this adverse environment outside. The only problem is that in the developed world, the undernourished baby in the womb is undernourished because his mother smokes too much, perhaps takes crack cocaine, or in a large and underprivileged proportion of our society, yes, doesn't get a good diet. So the baby comes out into the outside world and there's a fast food store on every corner. Now there's no shortage of food and there's an explosion of obesity. The falasha, the Ethiopian Jews, flown to Israel, born in Ethiopia, probably undernourished in the womb, flown to Israel overnight to a society where food was plentiful, now have one of the highest incidences of diabetes and obesity in the world. So these are conditions that we can prevent if we understand fetal development properly.
Let me see if I get you straight. You're saying that if a fetus isn't well-nourished, it assumes that's because there's not a lot of food outside, and it will be born with a very slow metabolism so that it could preserve and make use of every calorie it gets. But if it's exposed to a lot of food, particularly a lot of fatty food, like fast food, that slow metabolism is going to mean that the baby and then the adult puts on a lot of weight.
Exactly, exactly. And we know, just as I mentioned earlier, that you grow a small liver and you can't handle cholesterol, we know from studies with rats that the actual composition of different types of cells in the liver of babies that were undernourished as fetuses is different. They've grown along a different trajectory. They've prepared for a different world, and then we in the developed world fool them by giving them lots of food afterwards.
One of the questions you mentioned you're studying in your lab is premature birth. And I think one of the questions you're asking is, what's responsible for premature birth? Is it something that the fetus itself is programmed to do, to come out early, or is it a response that is coming directly from the mother's body?
Yes, I think that the problem with premature birth is it's almost certainly has several causations, and it's never very clever of scientists or anybody to use the same term, and we're really rather remiss. We use the same term for things caused by from different causations. We now know that probably somewhere between 40 and 60% of prematurity is caused by low-grade infection. There's some even very interesting studies that tooth decay, that bad teeth actually predisposes to premature birth. And that's, of course, a very simple thing to cure. Just go to the dentist before you become pregnant and make sure your teeth are in good order and keep them in good order during pregnancy. How does generalized low-grade infection cause prematurity? Well, we know that in the presence of infection, some of the hormones and other compounds that are produced to combat the infection also stimulate the uterus to contract. So we have to find out about these mechanisms. Some of them could be very easily prevented on the social level, as I say, by better dental hygiene. Others we need to know about how the fetus is stressed and how the fetus sometimes is saying better out than in. There are some forms of prematurity where probably the intrauterine environment is suboptimal because the placenta is failing, that the baby may indeed do better in the neonatal intensive care unit than inside.
Well, Dr. Nathaniels, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much indeed. I've enjoyed it.
Dr. Peter Nathaniels is the director of the Laboratory for Pregnancy and Newborn Research at Cornell University. His new book is called The Prenatal Prescription. This is Fresh Air.